little snake on my back. I keep a red bone on my side.
Morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Wednesday, April 18th, 2018 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. And a wild ride it is. It begins with us not being able to play clips. So we'll just talk a lot. We'll talk about talky things, as we say sometimes here. Anyway, and we'll open up the phone lines. We'll just do that out of the gates. 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. A lot to talk about. It all ties together. Been going on for a long time. But all that evil needs to get a foothold is to, you know, for good men to do nothing. And that's a challenging discussion, because where are the, who are the good men? Anyway, I read in a local periodical, one of the little kind of, you know, Village Voice type papers recently, a woman who wrote a letter to the editor, and she said, if they try to make my guns illegal, well, then I guess I'll just be an outlaw. And when I read that, it was about 2 weeks ago or something like that, I thought, yeah, see, there's something interesting about this broadcast. I don't know. I mean, it's not the most informative. It's not, I wouldn't say it's the best or, you know, by any measure or whatever, but there's something about it. From the beginning, it had a sort of spiritual connotation, if you will. And I've told that story before. I'm not going to tell it right now, but it's interesting how things happen. So recently we changed the main bump to Chris Stapleton's Outlaw State of Mind. And then I read that and I thought, that's the point. You know, if they're going to make right wrong, if we're going to keep making right wrong or outlaw right, then I guess I'll just be an outlaw. And this sort of gets back to what I said yesterday. You know, this is where the rubber starts meeting the road. What, how do we define right? Well, in America, it was pretty simple. There are three main documents: the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the first 10 amendments to it. And you can carry those in your pocket. Yet how many people do? And if we can carry those in our pocket and use that as the measure, as the standard for anything, and filtering all intrigue and sophistry, all ambition, regardless of who or what or where, regardless of the names and the combinations and who's doing what, if we filter all of that through the Constitution in the proper context, you know, with the help of Jefferson, for example, that a departure from principle in one instance becomes a precedent for a second, that second for a third, and so on, until the bulk of society is reduced to mere automatons of misery with sensibilities left only for sinning and suffering. And when it comes to interpreting those documents, again, Jefferson helps us. He says, on every question of construction, let us carry ourselves back to the time when the Constitution was adopted, recollect the spirit, that spirit manifested in the debates, and instead of trying what meaning may be squeezed out of the text or invented against it, conform to the probable one in which it was passed. It's that simple. It's that simple. You can carry these documents in your pocket. You know, years ago, well, that's a longer story, but, you know, we should never, some would argue, myself included, sometimes, certainly, maybe not always, but definitely at some points in life, we should never leave home without our sword. And what I mean by sword is the Word of God, sharper than any two-edged sword, living and powerful, living and active, depending on your translation, and a copy of these documents. You know, I would argue that maybe we should keep a copy of these documents in the, you know, one of the pockets or sleeves or jackets or whatever of our Bible. These are, you know, these are first principles in America, so to speak. Not terribly fond of that term, but I think, you know, if we're going to use it, it's probably fitting here. Yet how many people do that? How many people do these things? And we would, things would change. If we stop drifting, start getting back to putting our heads on straight. I was thinking about it yesterday after yesterday's broadcast. If you think about it, we are, those of us who are old enough to at least have known the World War II generation well, not, you know, like great grandkids that barely knew some of the World War II folks before they passed away or whatever. But, you know, those of us who knew them well. I was born in 1970. You know, folks my age or older, maybe a little bit younger, but not much, are in a unique position in history. We are in a unique position in history because we can look back at what Tom Brokaw referred to as the greatest generation, and we can know, I mean, not from, we weren't there, but from firsthand accounts of those that were, we can hear from that generation about things that happened, things that they did, the way their character was shaped. And what's interesting is we can know, coming out of the trials and tribulations they faced, the Great Depression, for example, World War II, they knuckled down, they did what they had to do, regardless of how they were beguiled and misled. They were a very hardworking, self-reliant generation, much more so than their children, I would say, and so on. With each successive generation, they would probably argue their parents were more hardworking and self-reliant. But this was a generation, generally speaking, born just after some of the worst moments in American history, the creation of the Federal Reserve, the creation of the IRS, you know, the Federal Reserve Act, income tax, et cetera, et cetera, and then into the FDR years. Anyway, so that was when we really started to drift toward destruction, not just our own, but obviously the rest of the world. And so you can see this generation that was hardy, self-reliant, you know, rugged, hardworking, self-reliant. We had industry. People talk about, you know, coming crashes. I mentioned Jim Rickards on Monday. Wanted to play that clip. We'll, you know, obviously hold off on that for today, I guess. But, you know, there's talk again, those kinds of things happening. And we don't have, what do we have? How could we recover now? We don't have the industry. We don't have the work ethic. I mean, you think about it, in simple terms, we keep hearing that America is a largely service-based economy, and service sucks. It's really terrible. It's pretty terrible just about everywhere you go. And just when you think there's a gleaming, you know, a shining city on a hill, this is where service is great. Nope, that was sort of an anomalous experience. That was, you know, that was the outlier, as they say. Nope. You go back and you get the same old crappy service that you get everywhere. And there's something to that, you know. Everyone is experiencing some form of difficulty. I've said it on this broadcast. We're all psychologically traumatized in this society, really from cradle to grave. That is one of the ways that I would say you could accurately characterize the American experience these days. It's pretty awful. Even if you're someone who happens to be an Ivy League pirate, you know, they're just as psychologically traumatized. Because to be an Ivy League pirate, you have to give yourself over to lots of bad ideas and then, you know, entirely buy into them and believe them. Anyway, we are in a unique position. Those of us old enough to have really known the World War II generation, because now we can see how rugged and self-reliant, and that's, you know, that sounds sensational. It's not, you know, these are people that just got stuff done. They got up every day, they did stuff, and they were very giving, I suppose. They just had their heads screwed on straighter than folks today. You know, they did what needed to be done. If someone needed to be helped, someone needed help, they would help when and where appropriate. We didn't need a bunch of government institutions to wrap us all in bubble wrap and make sure that we, you know, to protect us from ourselves. Someone needed help, they helped. And very selfless, in very selfless fashion. And it went unspoken. You know, it wasn't a thing that needed grandstanding or, you know, any of that kind of nonsense. We didn't have to celebrate. You know, I mentioned the Boston Marathon yesterday and Juan Williams thing. You know, a woman wins the Boston Marathon. Great. Congratulations. Why do we have to make it a big deal? And, you know, we see this in the elections these days. Well, you just don't want Gina Haspel to serve because she's, why don't you like women? It's not about women. It's about that she's done some really awful things. When did her qualifications and her background and her ideological bent, her, you know, thinking that these kinds of awful things and the worst atrocities, I guarantee you, we haven't really heard. We've heard about some really awful things. You know, Jane Mayer's book, for example, and some others really document some awful things. And that was 10 years ago, but we haven't heard the worst of it. So isn't that what's important? Not what gender she is? Anyway, this generation didn't do that kind of stuff. And there were lines they wouldn't cross. And that was a firewall. That was a bulwark for America. Kept us safe. And I am convinced that as we've been losing the World War II generation, as we lose them, so the acceleration of the slide proceeds. because there were lines they wouldn't cross. But their children, the baby boomers, you know, no offense, but it's not the same for them. And it's not their fault, just like it wasn't necessarily their parents' fault that they didn't understand the machinations behind World War II and that it was pre-planned for a specific purpose and, you know, all of those kinds of things, and that every major conflict we've been subjected to has been staged. You know, again, that Patrick Claussen clip is essential, whatever, listening, I guess. The YouTube video of the talk was titled "How to Build U.S.-Israeli Coordination on Preventing an Iranian Nuclear Breakout." That's what they titled it. But, you know, he says, you know, this is how we should get to – if we can't goad Iran into something, this is – you know, people should think about how we traditionally get to war. How does the U.S. traditionally get to war? And, you know, this is how you do it, false flag events. So I was at the end, and he says it all, really, in that 60 or so second little clip. What does he say? I think crisis initiation is hard, is the way that he said it, if memory serves. Yeah. Nope. I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough, and it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us to war with Iran. Which leads me to conclude that if, in fact, compromise is not coming, that the traditional way America gets to war is what would be best for us. That's what this guy said. I mean, that's shocking. Again, the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. Is this okay? This is not okay. I began today, before today's broadcast, listening to some of the older stuff. I've been listening to some of the older stuff in recent days. You know, I mentioned a couple of those, I think yesterday. Some of the folks that we've heard from, the old stuff, you know, Ben Swan's Reality Checks, Kurt Nimmo's pieces, Journeyman Pictures, James Corbett's Corbett Report stuff over the last 6 years about Syria. Really graceful. She's done some great stuff. There are some great channels that have done some great stuff. And, you know, of course, folks like Eva Bartlett and Vanessa Beely and, you know, Patrick Henningsen and crew over at 21st Century Wire. There are a lot of folks that have been telling us what's going on. But that soundbite from Patrick Claussen over at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, that was back on September 24th of 2012. You know, that was when, I mean, it was a while into it, but when things were really starting to heat up in Syria. And we're, you know, anyway, we'll talk more when we come back. Stick around.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855, the number 2, keep it.
Welcome back. So we've been listening to a lot of the old stuff, just for context, and it's just unbelievable. Again, Patrick Claussen's remarks back in 2012, September, and, you know, astonishing. Astonishing. There was a generation and a time not too long ago. And then, you know, Patrick Claussen, as we know, because we've played that one-minute clip, I mean, it's just insane, the stuff, you know. The things that he said. Crisis initiation is tough. I frankly think that crisis initiation is tough. That's at the 1:15, 1 hour, 15 minute and change mark, 12 to 15 seconds, somewhere in there. Patrick Claussen steps back up. I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough. Crisis initiation Then, of course, you have, you know, so this is, again, this is why I say, you know, P2OG meets R2P. Crisis initiation, P2OG, proactive preemptive operations group, stimulating reactions. And what does that mean in a dialectical world? You know, problem, reaction. Oh, here's a solution. R2P, responsibility to protect. We got to protect people from themselves. You know, as Douglas McGregor said it last Friday on Tucker and Laura Ingraham's broadcast. You know, he was right. He said it mainly on Tucker's broadcast. People like Patrick Claussen live in a, you know, a Madeleine Albright sort of world where we're going to go around the world crusading as the world's policeman and saving the world from itself, basically. That's kind of the UN mantra. And, you know, as has been noted, you know, going back specifically and most notably perhaps to the outgrowth of the metastasis known as the Fabian Socialists, they basically said, yeah, we're going to create a utopia that will actually probably function a lot more like a dystopia, but it's going to be a utopia eventually, and a lot of people are going to have to die in the process, but you know, it's going to be great. Like most of the people on the planet are going to have to die. We're going to use a variety of means to convince people, societies, you know, to be suicided, and it's going to be great. That's really kind of, and again, that this all ties back to this death cult ideology series. Today is Wednesday already, and I guess this is part 25 now. I think I took a break one day or something. There was a break in that first week and then a break last week, I think. But it's this really, you know, is to kind of hopefully focus attention on the ideology that's behind all of these things that we see all around us that are so bizarre and make no sense to anyone who thinks rationally or logically or sensibly, because they're the opposite of those things in this Orwellian nightmare in which we find ourselves. So it's part 25 of continuing from the series of the murderous proxy, the U.S. power elite, the NME, National Military Establishment, which was originally what the Eisenhower's military-industrial complex was referred to after the 1947 National Security Act, and the IIC, Intelligence Industrial Complex, the term that I believe Tim Sherrock coined back in 2005. It's my understanding he did. And what Patrick Porter has referred to, borrowing from Philip Bobbitt's The Shield of Achilles, the market security state, not just the market state, but the market security state, and the death cult, I call it, aka Masonic Brotherhood of Death, because there are always these fraternal orders that, and the fraternal order, like everything, I mean, you think about Vegas, how organized crime went corporate and mainstream. So does the, you know, the fraternal orders have been, they've gone corporate. And largely, you know, that's largely what comprises the intelligence community. It's a great way to keep people compartmentalized. You know, they have all these secret oaths and secret meetings, and you know, people are blackmailed sort of in the same sorts of ways. But it's not creepy and esoteric as much as it's just corporate now. It's just, no offense, it's just nothing personal. It's just business. And, you know, most people don't realize the history of that idiom, that it ties back to organized crime. So, you know, continuing in this series, I want to get back, though, real quick to the point about we are in a unique position to look back and see this generation that was, you can see, we have an opportunity to see the outworking, the evidence, you know, of kind of what I was talking about yesterday. We can talk about a lot of things, But we can see things in action now. We can see how the World War II generation was. Very rugged, very self-reliant, selfless. You know, they were humble, certainly more humble than generations today. And just a different sort of character, or character period, you might argue. Fast forward to today, no offense, kids, but the young people, some of them, I think, can barely tie their shoes some days. Haven't been out in the woods, haven't done anything, gotten any dirt on it, you know, so to speak. And couldn't figure anything out. So the point is, all of this socializing of everything, these programs and, you know, the communitarian technocratic way is part of the soft kill. You know, taking that out to a far-reaching end, the UBI, the Universal Basic Income, it's been proven, is a way to basically turn people into a boneless chicken ranch. Ecclesiastes 3:22 is one of my favorite verses. Nothing is better than man. I would call it the meaning of life, in a sense. Nothing is better than that man be happy in his activities, for that is his lot, for who will bring him to see what will occur after him? In other words, happy doing the work that he does, so to speak. Not just work, but, you know, happy in his daily pursuits and his daily activities and his daily work. When people can do that and feel good about it, whatever that is, then life is good. But when that starts to get stunted and can't think of the word. Anyway, when it's hampered or inhibited, then, you know, not so good. So anyway, you look at all of these programs, and obviously we were seeing programs from the, you know, early days, even before the World War II generation, but certainly, you know, into the FDR years, Wilson, while Teddy, Woodrow, FDR, those guys in particular. But you can look back and see this generation that was hardy, rugged, self-reliant, selfless, had character. You fast forward to now, with all of these programs, as we come to now, are we better? Is this crop of young people today better than those born, say, 100 years ago? And I would argue no. And you can see, the point is not to try to, you know, point fingers or vilify or make anyone feel bad or anything like that. But you can see, the point is to shine a bright light on the fact that you can see how all of the socializing has a crippling effect on the vast majority of society. All of this trying to protect, it's crippling people. It has a very deleterious effect. Instead of just letting people alone to figure things out. And we'll make mistakes. And that's how you learn. I mean, that's one of the idioms, right? How do you know, all of the successful people say, how do you, you know, they ask, how do you become successful? By making good decisions, which usually comes from making bad decisions. So how else do you learn? And that's one of the opportunities that young people have been robbed of. It's been stolen from them, these opportunities to learn these things. And I was thinking yesterday, after yesterday's broadcast, about how, you know, I think about phrases that I heard my grandparents say. And it wasn't just a cliche. It wasn't just an Orwellian slogan. These were life lessons that were boiled down to little phrases, key phrases, to keep you safe and to keep you on the straight and narrow. Do young people today have the same lessons? I dare say maybe not. Anyway, like I said, phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. I'm going to back up to Monday and sort of do a little cleanup. Actually, maybe I'll back up to Friday and read my letter to the world, because I wrote a letter last week before we knew the inevitable was coming on Friday. And, you know, maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's smallish or whatever, but I felt compelled. So, you know, because I think we all would like to say at certain points to certain people, I mean, we hear, again, as we've discussed on this broadcast this week, the evidence that Monday, actually, I think it was William in Montana and I were talking about how the evidence that, you know, we hear about babies and we have to do this and we have to do that. And we always hear that, the women and children, when you're using chemical weapons against women and children. Oh, well, that's, you know, oh, you mean like we've done? You know, white phosphorus, depleted uranium, cluster bombs, these kinds of things are not violations of all kinds of international conventions and, you know, arguably chemical weapons. White phosphorus and depleted uranium, which is, I mean, there's a strong argument to be made that using DU is far worse than sarin or chlorine. What's the dissipation period, you know, the half-life? Anyway, you know, again, death cult ideology. Only death cult ideologues would think something like that was okay. Basically melting generations of people, melting their DNA. So, you know, you see these kinds of things and you want to say to the world, this is not okay, but we do have a responsibility to protect, a genuine one, not this contrivance that is foisted upon us, but we do. It was the, you know, the way Andrew Jackson expressed it, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty, and you must pay the price if you wish to secure the blessing. And what does that mean? Eternal vigilance. It means we never go to sleep. We take turns on watch. While I sleep, you're on watch. While you sleep, I'm on watch. We're always on watch. We're eternally vigilant. And we hold everything that comes into view up to the standard of the Declaration, Constitution, and first 10 amendments to it. And if it doesn't comport to that standard, then it goes away. Plain and simple. Oh, but security. Otherwise, again, a departure from principle in one instance becomes a precedent for a second, that second for a third, and so on until what happens? Well, sometimes you find yourself by degrees pointed in the exact wrong direction, the exact opposite direction of your, you know, supposed or intended course. Anyway, so when these kinds of discussions arise, and especially with like what's happening in Syria, and look what we're hearing. Donald Trump himself said, we're going to investigate. You know, if it was Syria, if it was Russia, if it was Iran, if it was Syria, if it was all of them, we're going to find out. And that sounds like a witch hunt. That doesn't sound like an investigation. What is happening? And this is what that was just days after John Bolton actually stepped into his new role, shiny new role. As chief warmongering advisor, once again. Anyway, and for those who, you know, want to talk seventh dimension chess, the way to do that is not to surround yourself with badder and badder, worser and worser company. Bad company corrupts good morals, as the Bible says. So you don't surround yourself with a bunch of bad people hoping that they'll hang themselves with enough rope, because they'll do what they always do, which is to hang everyone else. The more they can hang, the better, because they're death cult ideologues. I'm going to read my letter and Well, I'll read it. I don't know. Yeah, I'll read it real fast. Maybe not real fast. Dear World, this is for those folks that are, subjected to the tyranny at the hands of the U.S., this death cult ideology, the proxy tip of the spear that is best represented or known as the United States military industrial complex, the Pentagon in particular. Dear World, and quoting Edmund Burke and Martin Luther King first, Edmund Burke, an event has happened upon which it is difficult to speak and impossible to be silent. It's Edmund Burke on the impeachment of Warren Hastings and Martin Luther King, of course. April 4, 1967, Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break Silence, he said, I found myself in full accord when I read, a time comes when silence is betrayal, and that time has come for us. We, the American people, are very sorry for the crimes committed against you, ostensibly in our name, planned by dark, nefarious, publicly faceless, and in some cases even deceased perpetrators and intriguers, and carried out by various proxies, surrogates, hapless, unwitting dupes, accomplices, and patsies, and sadly, even our own misguided people. Let me assure you, some of us have been doing our level best to become informed and very well aware of what has happened and the ongoing crimes committed in an effort to take proper, effective action against these nefarious forces who've hijacked this arguably once great nation. From Congressman Larry McDonald's introduction to Gary Allen's The Rockefeller File back in 1976, the drive of the Rockefellers and their allies is to create a one-world government combining supercapitalism and communism under the same tent, all under their control. Do I mean conspiracy? Yes, I do. I am convinced there is such a plot, international in scope, generations old in planning, and incredibly evil in its intent. And from David Rockefeller's Memoirs, 2003, Chapter 27, Proud Internationalist, page 406. For more than a century, ideological extremists at either end of the political spectrum have seized upon well-publicized incidents to attack the Rockefeller family for the inordinate influence they claim we wield over American political and economic institutions. Some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists, quote unquote, and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure, one world, if you will. If that is the charge, I stand guilty and I am proud of it. Continuing, we know you have every right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, as have we. We do not believe in American exceptionalism, quote unquote, as defined by these designing and ambitious intriguers, and as perhaps best typified in the emblematic example of William Avery Devil Bill Rockefeller Sr., a man who tricked his sons, like John D., seemingly to teach them how to conduct business. We do, however, believe in the brand of American exceptionalism of which Andrew Jackson spoke in his farewell address, that of a hardworking, honest as the day is long, salt of the earth sort of people. We believe in the sort of American exceptionalism for which our forefathers fought and died during World War II, and others obviously, but in spite of the knowledge, the latter were hoodwinked by the former into fighting yet another surreptitious, contrived and fomented so-called war. Although any apology for such crimes against mankind on such a magnanimous scale as to constitute the authorship of R.J. Rummel's book Death by Government may seem petty and insincere, please accept our humble and sincere apology. We, the American people, understand all too well. We've forgotten the essential lessons of our own history, including those of our first president under the Constitution, who in his farewell address of 1796 gave us this wise exhortation for all of posterity, quote, observe good faith and justice towards all nations, cultivate peace and harmony with all, religion and morality enjoin this conduct, and can it be that good policy does not equally enjoin it. It will be worthy of a free, enlightened, and at no distant period a great nation to give to mankind the magnanimous and too novel example of a people always guided by an exalted justice and benevolence. Who can doubt that in the course of time and things, the fruits of such a plan would richly repay any temporary advantages which might be lost by a steady adherence to it? Can it be that that providence has not connected the permanent felicity of a nation with its virtue? The experience, at least, is recommended by every sentiment which ennobles human nature. Alas, is it rendered impossible by its vices? In the execution of such a plan, nothing is more essential than that permanent, inveterate antipathies against particular nations and passionate attachments for others should be excluded, and that in place of them, just and amicable feelings toward all should be cultivated. The nation which indulges towards another a habitual hatred or a habitual fondness is in some degrees a slave. It is a slave to its animosity or to its affection, either of which is sufficient to lead it astray from its duty and its interest. Antipathy in one nation against another disposes each more readily to offer insult and injury, to lay hold of slight causes of umbrage, and to be haughty and intractable when accidental or trifling occasions of dispute occur. Hence frequent collisions, obstinate, envenomed, and bloody contests. The nation, prompted by ill will and resentment, sometimes impels to war the government, contrary to the best calculations of policy. The government sometimes participates in the national propensity and adopts through passion what reason would reject. At other times, it makes the animosity of the nation subservient to projects of hostility instigated by pride, ambition, and other sinister and pernicious motives. The peace, often, sometimes perhaps, the liberty of nations has been the victim. So likewise, a passionate attachment of one nation for another produces a variety of evils. Sympathy for the favorite nation facilitating the illusion of an imaginary common interest in cases where no real common interest exists, and infusing into one the enmities of the other, betrays the former into a participation in the quarrels and wars of the latter without adequate inducement or justification. It leads also to concessions to the favorite nation of privileges denied to others, which is apt doubly to injure the nation making the concessions by unnecessarily parting with what ought to have been retained, and by exciting jealousy, ill will, and a disposition to retaliate. In the parties from whom equal privileges are withheld, and it gives to ambitious, corrupted, or deluded citizens who devote themselves to the favorite nation facility to betray or sacrifice the interests of their own country without odium, sometimes even with popularity, gilding with the appearances of a virtuous sense of obligation, a commendable deference for public opinion, or a laudable zeal for public good. The base or foolish compliances of ambition, corruption, or infatuation, as avenues to foreign influence in innumerable ways, such attachments are particularly alarming to the truly enlightened and independent patriot. How many opportunities do they afford to tamper with domestic factions, to practice the arts of seduction, to mislead public opinion, to influence or awe the public councils? Such an attachment of a small or weak toward a great or and powerful nation dooms the former to be the satellite of the latter. Against the insidious wiles of foreign influence, I conjure you to believe me, fellow citizens, the jealousy of a free people ought to be constantly awake, since history and experience prove that foreign influence is one of the most baneful foes of Republican government. We'll conclude that when we come back. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com. Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
From my letter to the world from Washington's farewell address, George Washington's farewell address, against the insidious wiles of foreign influence, the jealousy of a free people ought to be constantly awake, since history and experience prove that foreign influence is one of the most baneful foes of a Republican government. But that jealousy, to be useful, must be impartial, else it becomes the instrument of the very influence to be avoided instead of a defense against it. Excessive partiality for one foreign nation and excessive dislike of another cause those whom they actuate to see danger only on one side and serve to veil and even second the arts of influence on the other. Real patriots who may resist the intrigues of the favorite are liable to become suspected and odious, while its tools and dupes usurp the applause and confidence of the people to surrender their interests. The great rule of conduct for us in this, in regard to foreign nations, is in extending our commercial relations to have with them as little political connection as possible. Sadly, I say, not only have we forgotten these essential lessons of history, and not only have we violated these warnings, but we have in fact, in many cases, been conscripted to the very antithesis of Washington's exhortation. And though some may argue we are not primarily responsible or to blame, having not cooked up the plot ourselves, having had our history largely occluded, stolen, and hidden from public view, and having had our dearest institutions, economy, industry, education, religion, politics, law, all hijacked by said intriguers, as Edmund Burke wrote, I could show that the same faction has in one reign promoted popular seditions and in the next been a patron of tyranny. I could show that they have all of them betrayed the public safety at all times and have very frequently with equal perfidy made a mark of their own cause and their own associates. Even so, we would not seek to escape assigning ourselves culpability, responsibility, and remedial action. As President Kennedy put it in his address before the American Newspaper Publishers Association, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it is in my control. As John Stuart Mill said, bad men need nothing more to compass their ends than that good men should look on and do nothing. And Edmund Burke wrote, when bad men combine, the good must associate, else they will fall one by one, an unpitied sacrifice in a contemptible struggle. With that, may we say, we do not intend to remain silent, look on, and do nothing. We do not intend to permit silence, apathy, cupidity, conscription, or complicity to the extent that is within our control. And so it is that we take responsibility as Americans, assign ourselves the proper culpability, and dutifully embark on our course of eternal vigilance, which we were reminded is the price of liberty, and that we must pay that price if we wish to secure that blessing. And so it is further in this spirit that we offer you, the world, our sincere apology and ask your forgiveness for the wrongs done you in our name. And we offer our sincere condolences and ask your forgiveness for the losses you've suffered in our name. Sincerely, the American people. And when I say sincerely, I mean in the Latin sense, sincera, without wax. So that is my letter to the world. And I believe that we have a responsibility, a duty, an obligation to stop washing our hands of things. You know, we've allowed the technocrats to come between us and our responsibility, which reminds us